Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks. You're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit a million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast presented by Overdrive. This is Jill. Y'all, got that y'all in dramatic pause. Today is an interview I did with Ashley C. Ford about her new memoir, Somebody's Daughter, and y'all. When I say I loved this book, I mean I loved this book. I was like highlighting things in my copy and like writing notes, and just it's so good. I can't even tell you how good this book is. Like, words do not describe it. You have to read it, you know, because it is so good. And I don't want to like diminish how good Ashley's book is by like trying to put my own words on it when you should just go read her words in her memoir, Somebody's Daughter. So yeah, I'm really excited for this interview. I am so excited for y'all to listen to it and to go read her book. Yeah, I think that's it. I don't think we have anything going on. If you want to get a hold of us, you can go to our website, professionalbooknerds.com. We are on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at ProBookNerds. And you can always email us at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com. So that's all I got for y'all. So I hope you all enjoy this interview I did with Ashley C. Ford on the Professional Book Nerds podcast. Hi, everyone. This is Jill, and my guest today is Ashley C. Ford. Ashley is a podcaster and essayist, and she has written or guest edited for The Guardian, Elle, BuzzFeed, Out Magazine, Slate, Teen Vogue, Mary Claire, The New York Times, and various other web and print publications. She's taught creative nonfiction writing at The New School and Catapult, and has had her work listed among Longform and Longreads Best of 2017. She has been named among Forbes magazine's 30 Under 30 in Media, Brooklyn Magazine's Brooklyn 100, Time Out New York's New Yorkers of the Year, and Variety's New Power of New York. Her much anticipated memoir, which is fantastic, Somebody's Daughter, is out now. Ashley, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to talk with you. It's a good day.
It is a good day. Yeah, we are recording this on Pub Day, and it's a big day for you.
Yes.
Can you start by giving our listeners a brief introduction to Somebody's Daughter?
Absolutely. Somebody's Daughter is a coming of age memoir about my girlhood growing up in Indiana with an incarcerated father and a single parent for a mother. And it sort of is, I think, in a lot of ways, just a story trying to help people understand that children are real people and that we remember things and we feel things deeply. And we become the adults who will be entrusted with caring for this world. And so we need to be paying attention to how we're setting that foundation, not just in families and communities, but globally.
Yeah, I want to, you know, you mentioned that, you know, children, they do remember things. And one of the things that struck me most about this book is you seemed to remember things so clearly and are able to communicate that to readers. And I'm just, you know, I know you talk in the book about how some of these things you had started to write about, but how did you manage to remember things like just so clearly?
You know, I think because I was a kid of obviously the 90s. I was born in 1987. So much of the media I consumed in books and in television, if you really think back to that time, what was popular and widely available in mainstream culture, it was about adults who needed to either reclaim or reconnect with their child selves in order to have or maintain a connection to a sense of magic or purpose or love in the world. And I think because I consumed so much of that media as a kid, it was always really important to me that I did not forget what it felt like to be a child. And that I didn't forget the moments that excited me or hurt me or anything like that. Because to be perfectly honest, it seemed like quite often the adults who were not there for me in the way I needed or who harmed me had broken that connection with their own child selves. It was as if, to me, they no longer remembered what it was like to be a kid. And I didn't want to be that kind of adult. I wanted to be the kind of adult who saw children as people. And I guess I figured that the only way to do that would be to remember how much of a person I really was, even at those small ages.
That's interesting. Yeah, because you do talk about the media, you know, that you were consuming at the time. And as someone born in 1981, yes. I was like, oh, this all feels very familiar to me. Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I was recently talking to someone and I brought up, you know, the movie Hook with Robin Williams.
Oh, I love that movie. Yep.
And he couldn't eat. He couldn't survive.
Yeah.
In Never Never Land until he remembered that Peter Pan was inside him. He had to remember who he had been then. That was the danger of leaving Never Never Land, was not necessarily forgetting the magic, it was forgetting you.
Yeah, that's a really good example. Yeah, yeah. I know, you know, I'm someone who, I will say that when I was reading the book, I started highlighting and like underlining passages, specifically when you were talking about your relationship with your mom, because mine was not the same degree, but there was a lot of things I definitely, that resonated with me. And I look around my office and I've noticed now that I'm like nearing 40, that I have a lot of things like tchotchkes and little reminders of childhood. And I think it's because I felt like when I was a kid, my mom wasn't necessarily there for me the way I needed her to be. And I didn't, I couldn't like be that kid that I wanted to be. And so now that I'm older, I have like, you walk into my office, it probably looks like, I mean, I got like a million Funko Pops here, because it probably looks, and a lot of them are from stuff from the 80s and the 90s from when I was growing up. But yeah, I usually am not one to like highlight or underline books, but yours, I definitely, there were moments where I was like, oh, this, I get this. I feel this.
Thank you. That means a lot to me. That means so much to me. It really does. Because, you know, reading a book is one thing, but feeling compelled to engage with it, I think is a completely other level of compliment. Like, so to tell me that you highlighted and, you know, underlined things, like, to me, that is a massive, massive compliment, because it just means you felt it, you know, and whether people like it or don't like it or love it or don't love it or whatever, if it makes them feel something, to me, that's a win. That's the kind of writing I'm trying to do.
I know, you know, in the book, I mentioned you talk about this moment years ago when you started to turn to writing as a means of working through some of the things and processing some of the events. In that way, this sort of feels like, at least to me as a reader, that this is kind of a book you've spent most of your life working towards.
Oh, yeah. That is absolutely true. That is absolutely true. I mean, even on the most basic level, I've been writing, parts of this book have existed for 10 years or more. You know, that's how long I've been writing some of this stuff and working on some of this text. And even before then, you know, I journaled off and on for years. And I think it was because, right, like I sometimes don't want to give the act of writing the credit it deserves in the maintaining of my mental health. But if I'm honest with myself and I look back, it's always been something I turn to in order to process my emotions and what was happening with me.
Yeah, I'm also one of those people who I have journals going back to college. And, you know, for me, journaling is always that place where I go where it's stuff that my journals are kind of depressing and dark, because it's that stuff I don't want inside of me. I need it out somewhere else. And so it all goes into my journals. And it's hard, you know, going back and reading them then, because I'm writing in the moment of those feelings, which are not great. They get pretty dark at points, and it's challenging to go back. And I can't really imagine, you know, you in the book, there are some really difficult moments that happen. Mm-hmm. And I can't even imagine what that was like to try and, you know, either relive them to rewrite them or just writing them.
It was really hard. I had to do a lot of work to take care of myself mentally and emotionally during the time that I've been writing this book. There's been a lot of therapy. There's been a lot of, I would say, big shifts in my general personality, especially when it comes to things like asking people for help. Something that, you know, 5 years I would have rather died. And now I much more quickly ask people for help when I need it. Because I've just learned that not only am I worthy of that, but that's just part of being human. I'm not going to get out of that. Nobody is going to get out of having to ask other people for help sometimes. It's just not feasible.
Yeah,
it's not feasible to do it and be a human being. And so I have learned to acquiesce control in that sense. I've learned to check in with myself, with my body, when I'm in an emotional state. And that all took training. You know, I think about that a lot. There are so many people, I think, who are going to read my book and see some of their experiences reflected back to them. And they won't be the people who have necessarily received the kind of training I've received to help me regulate my emotions and continue to feel safe. And that makes me really sad sometimes. Like, it makes me really sad that not everybody does get the chance to heal and to learn how to heal.
Yeah, it's definitely... it's a learning process, and finding those, like you said, checking in with your body and just sort of checking in with yourself. It's hard. And if you don't have, you know, anyone in your life, whether it's a friend or a therapist, to kind of teach you that, it's hard, but you know, maybe they'll take away something from your book, to help.
I hope if nothing else, they just go, oh, so maybe if I just try again tomorrow.
Yeah.
Maybe if I just try again tomorrow, it'll be okay. Maybe not even like it'll be okay, but maybe I'll just make it through tomorrow and maybe that's enough. Like, maybe it's just enough that I'll get to the other side and that I have no idea where my life can go and where I can end up. It's not going to be enough for everybody, but, you know, for the people who that's the kind of thing that they need and they want, like, I hope I give them some sense that that's available to them. And I hope that, you know, we're making a world that makes it more available to them, more easily available.
Yes. Yeah, that is one of the challenges added on to everything else, is just access to resources is not available to everybody. And we definitely need to work towards making therapy or medication, if somebody wants it, or any of those, you know, tools, there needs to be more access.
I absolutely agree. And that's something that's very important to me. That's something that I want to see more of in the world. I can't help, you know, but think of how many of the things that people will read in this book and think to themselves, that's terrible. That should never happen to a person. How many of those things might have been avoided had there been more or more easily accessible resources for the people in my family and myself to just have some time and some room and some practice healing.
And now we'll take a quick break for a word from this week's sponsor. Life can be stressful even under normal circumstances. 2020 challenged even the most difficult times of life. You need stress relief that goes beyond quick fixes. That's Headspace. Headspace is your daily dose of mindfulness in the form of guided meditations in an easy-to-use app. Headspace is one of the only meditation apps advancing the field of mindfulness and meditation through clinically validated research. So whatever the situation, Headspace really can help you feel better. Overwhelmed? Headspace has a 3-minute SOS meditation for you. Me, I sometimes have trouble falling asleep, and I love their wind down sessions. They also have morning meditations that parents can do with their kids. Headspace's approach to mindfulness can reduce stress, improve sleep, boost focus, and increase the overall sense of your well-being. You deserve to feel happier, and Headspace is meditation made simple. Go to headspace.com/PBN. That's headspace.com/PBN for a free 1-month trial with access to Headspace's full library of meditations for every situation. This is the best deal offered right now. Head to headspace.com/PBN today.
Yeah, because I know you had said about how a lot of the adults maybe had sort of forgotten what it was like to be a child and sort of forgot their child self. And so I think this book in a lot of ways is an examination of intergenerational trauma and how that gets passed down generation to generation. And it's sort of on the younger generation to try and fix it as much as possible, or at least try and minimize it.
Yeah. Or make sense of it.
Yeah.
On their own.
Yeah.
You know, which is, it's wild to be a young person trying to make sense of adult trauma as you experience it. And while often being unable or just not allowed to talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, you're not allowed to talk about it, which puts you in this silo of very easily believing that it's only you.
Mm-hmm.
It's only your family that's like this, that does this, that behaves this way. And that is never true. It's just never true. There are too many human beings walking around on the earth right now for that to be true. It's just not the case.
Yeah. 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 I think, you know, I think we're at a point where, you know, those young Gen Z kids, you know, like, people are more open about talking about that in a way that is actually really kind of, it's nice and open to nice is sort of minimizes it, but to see people being open about what is happening and finding that community in a way that I didn't have and you didn't have to find those people right. Like, yeah, like you understand, you've been here too.
Right. And you're right. It's not nice. It's kind.
Yeah.
It's kind because nice is about presentation. Nice is a performance. Kindness is about the truth. And I think that that's what, you know, these younger generations are more committed to than I think the rest of us are even ready for.
Yeah.
You know, is the truth. And I think that that's where real kindness lies, is in the truth. Because kindness is not, you know, about somebody feeling good about, you know, what you've done. Kindness is about doing something outside of like your own benefit, even though that doesn't really make sense, because anytime you do something for anybody's benefit, it's for everybody's benefit. But anyway. I do think that kindness is more about telling the truth in a way that is compassionate and that is actually intended to be helpful. And I think Generation Z is really, really good at kindness. And I think that they are a lot more bold about calling out niceness parading itself as kindness when they see it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. Yeah. And I think I like the way you broke down kindness versus niceness, because it's one of those things where, like, intellectually I understand the difference and can see the difference, but you articulated it in a very good way.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
If you don't mind my asking, what is your relationship with your family like now?
I mean, it's good. I don't have any issues or, you know, beef, I guess, with anybody in my family. I talk to my siblings pretty often. But, you know, we're all millennials. So it's a lot of social media, talking to each other through like Instagram and Facebook and stuff like that. Though me and my sister do talk on the phone. Pretty often, which to her being on FaceTime, we're only 6 years apart in age, but even that sometimes feels huge generationally, because every phone call for her is a FaceTime. Mm-hmm. Like, she only FaceTimes me and I'm like, what is happening? Just call me. What is this?
Oh, that's funny.
My relationship with my dad is, you know, growing as we get to know each other. We talk to each other often. He's a great guy. Love him a lot. I talk to my mom about just as often as my dad. Love her. She's doing well. It's just everybody right now is doing really well. I think that honestly, like, everybody in my family right now is just really happy, and that makes me happy. I love it when they're happy.
Yeah. It's my sister. I have a younger sister. She's 4.5 years. Oh God, I can't even do math. She's roughly 5 years younger than me. We'll do that. And so she's closer to your age. I'm one of those like older millennials. I'm like a geriatric millennial. And she also is like a FaceTime person. And I'm like, why? First, we like never call each other on the phone, but she always FaceTimes me, which I'm sort of like, okay, why? You could just text me. I don't understand.
It's wild.
It's so,
understand it.
I mean, but it's funny. Like, I have different threads with her. I have like a text thread. I have an Instagram thread with her. I actually have two, because like, she'll Instagram me from her like business Instagram account, and we never talk on the phone.
See? Yeah, it's just, it's a different, and the thing is, I feel really close to my sister, you know, and my, like, I don't feel like, you know, like some people be like, how do you feel close to somebody that you only like text or something? I'm like, I don't know. I guess it's just because I've known her her whole life. Maybe that's it.
Maybe. Yeah. No, it's, I think that's actually interesting to think about because I have a lot of friends, you know, like our age, and we're not really phone people. And so all we do is text. I have a friend who, before the pandemic, we would hang out. But throughout this whole pandemic, our entire friendship has been just texting memes to each other. And yet somehow that is enough. And I don't, like, it hasn't, I know her so well, and our friendship has such a solid foundation that we can go like weeks without talking, and then we'll just send each other a meme, and it's like no time has passed.
Yes. And those are some of my favorite kinds of relationships and friendships, because it's just like we're able to match energy in a really seamless way. And there's always like this level of comfort where it's just like, yeah, like we are in a rhythm. Yeah. And I love the rhythm that we're in. And, you know, I feel like that about my best friend, like, you know, me and my best friend, Ashley, yes, her name is also Ashley. we've been best friends since we were 14. And, you know, we haven't lived in the same city since we were 18. Mm-hmm. And she's my best friend. Like, that has been a thing maintained, you know, across the years.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, so much of that has been because we just allowed each other our humanity. We allowed each other the time to just be like, yeah, we haven't talked in a while, but it doesn't have to be weird when we start talking again. And I'm not going to do the thing where I'm going to be like, well, I didn't hear from you, or I don't know what's going on. And I'm also not going to do the thing where I text you all day, and if I don't hear back, then I'm going to think you're mad at me. It's like, I can't have that. Like, I can't do that. Like, I need people who understand that, like, we just need to be able to connect when we connect. If you need more than that, then communicate that to me. But otherwise, let's just find our rhythm and let's just vibe.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. That's very true. And it can be different with different friends. And yeah, it's great.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, Ashley, I have had so much fun talking to you. I just have one question left, which is, what do you hope readers take away from reading Somebody's Daughter?
I hope they take away that every child is an opportunity to have another person grow up in a way that they feel loved and feel safe and want that for everybody else. That's what I want.
That's a great answer. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Ashley.
Thank you for having me.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Adam Sokol and Jill Grunewald, and presented by Overdrive. For more information, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
Are you tired of seeing your teen or young adult struggle on a path that clearly isn't the right fit? Is your teenager confused about which direction to take after high school? The future of work is changing rapidly, and our kids need to know all of the options available after high school so they're empowered to make the choice that is best for them. In each episode, we explore the latest trends that are shaping the opportunities of today and tomorrow. I'm your host, Betsy Jewell, and this is the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast.